Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Thank you for spending one more hour with me today. So, what is the subject? Again, we discuss ISIS, the president calls it ISIL, and what do I think about it? I think I want to tell Americans, common sense, please. ISIL is more hype than threat. And I don't mean to disregard the viciousness with which they decapitated two innocent American journalists. I do not mean to disregard the decapitation, the killing, the assassination. The group is a very bad group. But so are many of the criminals here in the United States, so all over the country, all over the world. Today we discuss our new war, the ISIS-ISIL war. I think the neocons and the military-industrial complex have so far been successful in using the media, both American media and ISIL's media operation, to dictate American policy, American foreign policy. In effect, they have convinced Americans to force President Obama into a war footing. They have convinced Americans that 10,000, and now suddenly, no longer 10,000 fighters, folks, suddenly these numbers are changing. It's now 30,000 fighters, mostly in pickup trucks with attached guns, a large $2 billion bank account, presumably what they stole in Mosul and some other towns, a few guns, knives to decapitate people, of course, and a propensity to behead for effect are powerful enough to fight the armies in the region, let alone the United States. Should we really believe that? I discussed this in the blog called ISIS-ISIL is more hype than threat. So what I want to do is I want to go through that blog, and then I want you guys to give me a call and give me your opinions. Let's talk about this. What should we do about this? Remember, folks, this is a call-in show. The telephone number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I really want to hear from you, but not only that, folks, the country needs to hear from you. The country needs to come to a realization that we consistently get played and played and played and played. And this has to stop sometime. And who's going to do that? We should. So here's the blog. America, there is still time to avoid another costly mistake. The lead up to President Obama's ISIS-ISIL speech was a continuous hyperventilation and hype about the capability of ISIS and ISIL. from a media driven by puppets of the military-industrial complex and neocons. President Obama for some time was avoiding the ISIS-ISIL hype. He continued his don't do stupid stuff policy. President Obama disregarded Hillary Clinton's neocon light-like critique in her The Atlantic interview. He scolded a reporter for asking right-wing warmongering questions. Over the last few weeks, it was evident that the purveyors of hype and misinformation were having an effect on American citizens. The neocons were aided by the graphic beheading of two American journalists that instilled a carnal fear in many Americans, emotional push they needed. The president felt the heat as Americans supported some sort of action. The polls showed overwhelming support for military action. One could only have hoped that Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson and General David Petraeus had spoken up and gotten their views on ISIS-ISIL in the news sphere before the president acted. It may have discouraged or it may have encouraged others to speak up. It could have attenuated Americans' angst about the real power of the terrorists ISIS-ISIL. "The hype about this group is phenomenal," said Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. "I frankly find it difficult to believe. Great powers like the United States taking counsel of their fears is the first to destruction. We do not need to fear these people in the way that the media and others are hyping it. And people from my own party like Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who incidentally aren't going to be on the front line, I will guarantee you that. I will take an oath on that." Another quote, "ISIL in Iraq should not be overestimated," General David Petraeus said. "In many respects, it has nowhere near the roots, the numbers and structures that Al-Qaeda in Iraq and the associated Sunni insurgents had." Two generals, none of them are buying into the hype of ISIL. But continuing, "If America continues to react to every group that scares us by arbitrarily killing Americans and making threats on social media they likely cannot honor, it will actually make us less secure. America should invest in making America safer at home and letting those most affected by regional threats keep their own houses in order. Sadly, Americans die every day in the streets of America and abroad. It is simply not sensationalized in a manner that affects good policy. We must use common sense. Terrorists are not only in Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Somalia. They are all over. Many are already here in the United States, both Muslims and Christians, Islamist terrorists and right-wing militia terrorists in waiting. Dropping bombs in Iraq and Syria does nothing to prevent them from acting. Terrorists do not need a base of operation. We must not allow the neocons and the military-industrial complex to profit once again at the expense of investing our taxes in middle-class programs, middle-class projects, and security at home." Folks, this is serious, and this is something that we must do something about. The president was pulled dragging and kicking. You know, many people will blame him and claim that the president came into office as someone who didn't want to immediately engage in war. In fact, I'm of the belief price that he got in the beginning of his administration wasn't for anything that he particularly did, but it was for what the world expected out of a new America that would not be belligerent in the way it defends itself, would not be belligerent in the way it addressed the world, an America that would not always look for war as the solution to its problem. And the president, for a long time, if you take a look at some of the blogs that I wrote a couple of weeks ago, where he excoriated a reporter using right-wing talking points about his engagement in Iraq or lack thereof, and he pointed out specifically where this was not a military problem. This was a larger problem than just a military problem. Yes, these guys are decimating the region. There's no doubt that they're decimating the region. That small geographic reason that continuously is expanded when you see it in the media, as if these guys on a pickup truck really have the power to run a state, a power to run utilities, a power to run courts, a power to run all that makes a state. All that makes a state a state. We are being, as usual, hoodwinked, as I think the president himself normally says, and he was pulled kicking and dragging. 424, I'm coming to you next. Have a few more things to say, but let me bring you guys in first. 424, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, how's it going? Edgar Willis. It's Justin from California. I've called in the show before.
What's your name, sir?
Justin. Justin.
How you doing, Justin?
Good. I think that, you know, this problem that we're having with Iraq is something that we need to take a look at and definitely look at it. I mean, when we say terrorist, it's starting to point to Saudi Arabia. The reason I say that, 9/11 attacks, most of those 15 of the 19 were Saudi Arabian citizens or were born in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia continues to allow donors that we the American people have no idea, they continue to fund terrorism. I'm not saying that the government of Saudi Arabia is funding terrorism. I'm saying that they continue to turn a blind eye to it. I mean, you know, these people don't just get money out of nowhere, you know. It comes from somewhere. Another problem that I think with Iraq is that the Iraq government is not capable of defending itself. It's not capable of defending its borders. I would personally like to just see Iraq become a U.S. territory, as it would just solve there's too much. These people can't run themselves. There's, you know, you're always going to have the Shiite-Sunni battle unless there's a third party who's unrelated steps in. But I think there would also be a conflict because America gets the rep of being a Christian society, I guess. So for me personally, I would like to see Iraq just become a territory. We give them a governor, get them stable, and we defend them. And once they can get stable, they can either stay with us and rock with us and be a U.S. territory, or go ahead and try it on their own. Because right now, they're definitely not stable. Their government definitely cannot defend them.
I think you made two important points. The first one, I can actually agree with 100%, because that was the other part of the discussion that I was going to bring in, and that is, it is amazing to me that Secretary of State Kerry is going around the Arabian Peninsula and other areas trying to get support for decimating ISIS, and what he gets is tepid support from groups like or countries like Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia wouldn't even commit to military action, just allowing its land to be used for staging. I find that ironic, since ISIS, which again, you mentioned a very important point, and that is ISIS was initially, or I don't know if it's initially, but during several years, funded by folks out of Saudi Arabia. So you're absolutely correct about that. And there's another thing that I think it's important to note. I read a piece. My daughter left a piece on my Facebook page earlier this week. It is put out by a couple of reporters. These are, I think, freelancers. And this one was titled From Mohammed to ISIS, Iraq's Full Story. It's by, I think, a website called Wait But Why. But what is important for people to understand, and I think you alluded to that, is To a large extent, this is a conflict created by a conflict between Shias and Sunnis. And what most Americans don't understand is, first of all, these guys started from the same place, worshiping of Muhammad, you know, being followers of Muhammad. But when they had the split, we had that big split where the very vast majority of Muslims today are what? Sunnis. Very small percentage are what? Shia. I think it's like 10% in the area that is Shia. But the difference is that Iran and the Shias in Iraq make up, in that region, are in fact the majority. So what you find is that Saudi Arabia, in funding these people like ISIS, which in effect are Sunnis, their intent, it's evident, is to destabilize Saudi Arabia. That is to destabilize that area to ensure that Iran, the big Shia nation, and the upcoming Shia nation, Iraq, doesn't really pose a threat in their mind. And in the process, when their proxies get out of hand, as ISIS is their proxy in the war over there now, when their proxy gets out of hand, they don't want to do anything about it. You know why? Because who they want to use as their defense department? United States of America. So think about that. That is what Americans really should be thinking about. What we are doing is continuously cleaning up a mess. And what makes this very difficult is that there isn't really an Iraq, right? There was never, ever an Iraq. This was something put together by a French and a British guy. I can't remember their names right now. In the way they drew lines and separated people in ways that should not have been separated. So, in effect, a lot of these folks can come back and say, we have to keep our feet in there because we are the ones who created a lot of the problems by the way we partition countries out there or whatever. Look, if we keep our hands out of it now, there would be problems. If we put our hands in, there would be problems. I don't know. I kind of have the feeling that we should... Go ahead.
I personally think that this Sunni-Shiite conflict just reflects human nature. And oftentimes, you know, science has told us that we are 99... You know, the margin that we are different is so small that it's insignificant. But for human nature and the way people divide, they usually based on that little percent. And I think that is what happened with this. That is a great example. That division based on this small number is seen through the Shia and Sunni conflict. I mean, originally they were all under Muhammad, and following the death of Muhammad, that is where you get the Sunni and Shiite, because that was
right.
Those two groups formed because they had conflicts on who should be the next, I believe, caliphate or leader.
Right. It was divine, it should have been divine. The other one thought it should have been appointed. But go ahead.
Yeah, and when that happened, that they divided then. And it's amazing how that was so long ago. So long ago. And you think something like that, you know, you get over it. Yeah, cool, you know. I mean, did we like Bush, you know, the left wing? No, we didn't. But we continue to get over it, you know. We're not cutting people's heads off and stuff like that. So I think that you got to look at this. This is something that dies from human nature. That small percentage, people focus on that small percentage of different. And when you need to look at the whole picture of the 99 or so percent, where they're the same.
You're absolutely right. Now there's I want to touch on another subject that you brought up that is a bit dangerous, however. But before, folks, remember, this is Coffee Party Radio, Politics Done Right. Please give us a call at 646-929-2495. Again, this is a call-in show. The number is 646-929-2495. If you want to speak, please remember to push 1 so that I can know to call you. I see several of you are on right now, but nobody's talking. I'd love to hear from you. And not only would I want to hear from you, I want to hear whether you agree that ISIS ISIL, whatever you want to call it, is really being hyped up to get us into war or not. You know, I got some pushback on the Daily Coast on this, where some people think that the blog was a bit isolationist. That's not the case. And I see 620 is up with the hands up. 620, I'll be coming to you next. But before I get to that, I want to talk to Justin about making Iraq, in effect, a territory of the United States. On what law can we do that? And on what would give what gives us the right to do that?
I think that, personally, we do not have the right by law and by – there's nothing that gives us the right. But you think about how much we invested and how much it continues to fail. And if these Iraqis continue to show that they're not going to support legitimate elections and support their government, and the government's not going to be able to defend the people, then they then we should take over for a while. I mean, clearly, it kind of – we kind of have – it kind of has been ours, but it – I mean, it's like saying, what right does Russia have to rush into
to go into Ukraine?
To Ukraine, but what I'm proposing is that we give it to the actually Iraqis who the Iraqi people can actually vote. I'm not saying some you know what they did in Crimea, what the Russians did, and just had some random you know and block polls and stuff like that. I'm saying you know bring in you know. Officials from throughout the world to observe. They get the vote. If they want to be with us, they don't. I mean, because look at this. Look at the translators that helped us out there in our missions are now at risk. Now, you know, they're now at risk. They're getting their heads are getting hunted. Their families are getting hunted. And you know, are we granting them refugee status? No. Hell, we don't even want to help our brothers from Central and South America. Why would, you know, it's completely ridiculous. So I think that we've invested not just millions, but billions of dollars and even more in lives. And you know, we need, this is our, we're deeply invested. Clearly, that's why we're going to war, because once they took Mosul, then, you know, Mosul's right near Baghdad. We're going to war based on our personal interest. Iraq is our interest. So why not just make it a territory? It's nearly a territory. They can't defend themselves. Whenever something happens, the U.S. has to come in. Their Air Force is not up to par. Their Army is not up to par. They continue to, you know, send advisors, but it's not working. Every minute something happens, it's U.S., U.S., U.S. Army. Yeah, we're in NATO, but NATO doesn't do the majority. The majority of stuff in NATO is run by the U.S. And the majority of NATO assaults, it's majority U.S.,
So you want us to remain an imperial power?
I wouldn't say imperial, and you could use that context, but in this world where we're not, it wouldn't be an imperial power because we could easily leave the government there. We could easily leave their government to fail, and to just you know just to fail. But whenever they'll get into a war, who will be there? It's not going to be the Iraq Army. It's going to be the United States Army. It's going to be United States Armed Forces. So if that means imperialism, yes. But again, I'm not saying
what I think. I understand where you're coming from. I mean, I don't agree that we should ever talk about making some foreign land our own territory. Or anything like, oh, I see that Bobby Rodrigo is on. Bobby, give me a call. I want to hear you. Want to hear from you. But this is quite interesting. Before I say what I want to say about and bring this issue to domestic issues, I'm going to keep you hot, Justin, but let me bring in Jack. Come on in, Jack. Talk to me.
Okay, this is okay. You hear me?
I disagree
with this guy who 1,000% because
okay.
We should, okay, I'm going to go back here to how 9/11 started in the first place. We had troops stationed in Saudi Arabia. And because of the holy shrines of Mecca and whatever were violated personally by our troops, also 19 people from Saudi Arabia, or maybe 15 of them were from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, 15 of the 19
bombed
were.
The towers and all that stuff. We should not intervene. I'm not an isolationist, but he's 1,000% wrong on this whole thing about the territory of Iraq. What we should have done, okay, and got another fault we laid in the hands of the two Pauls, Paul Bremer and Paul Wolfowitz, step by Big Dick Cheney. I call him Big Dick. And that was back in 2004, is when we should have left Iraq to begin with. And we wouldn't have had ISIS. I mean, hindsight is 2020, but...
I'm going to tell you, Jack, let me interrupt you for a second here, Jack, because I don't know if that's true about not having ISIS. Remember what I said before, right? ISIS or whatever the group's name would have been funded by here's what Bush forgot, or Bush didn't know, or these guys knew, but they just wanted to maintain a position that will always have
oil,
a kind of war.
That's what it is.
Right. We know it's oil, but here's the other thing. Remember what we did. Remember that supposedly we want to have a check on Iran. Okay? Here we have Saddam Hussein, who was Sunni. It was a Sunni minority in Iraq that controlled the country, but it was Sunni. Now, the whole region, Sunnis are the vast majority. But it didn't. When Bush won in invaded Iraq, he understood the dynamics of the region. He understood that a democratic, and by the way, I am just talking as an agnostic here because I don't presume to know what these people want. But the one thing Bush, number one, realized is that a democratic Iraq meant a predominantly Shia country. Okay? It is that simple. It meant it to predominant Shia country, likely allied with Iran. So what that would have done in effect is added territory to the territorial influence to a bigger Iran. So Bush stopped going into it. I don't know what these other guys were thinking of when they left that vacuum in Iraq. And the reality is, without a Saddam and a Shia majority in Iraq, you could always estimate that Saudi Arabia would continuously create conflict to ensure that we didn't get a stable Iraq. Because a stable Iraq meant a strong Iran-Iraq alliance that is very close to Saudi Arabia, a kingdom. So we have to, we have to take a look at these particular issues. Continue on, Jack.
Okay. My solution is actually, I don't know, you bomb Syria and all of that. I think the other guy hit—I forget his name—hit on the human nature. You know, human nature
right. Is
to blame. That's another fault with everybody in the world, and that's we tend to be it's fundamentalism and
right.
And fundamentalists and extremism.
Right. Well, I don't
mind now. Okay, the terrorists. We got potentially terrorists in the United States. The militias, who the extreme right support. And
right.
I think there's a commonality between the Tea Party and ISIS. They are extremists, and extremism must be fought. Yeah.
I really don't want to go there, Jack. Let me say a few more things. I don't want to go there, but I'll bring you back in a little bit. I really don't want to go there about trying to make that type of comparison because I don't think that's even close to being true. I'm not a particular fan of the Tea Party, but by no means are they of that type. Now, we do have militias who have intent. There's no doubt about that, but I'll go into that and domestic issues a little bit on domestic issues as it relate to our ascent into war again. But right now, let me bring 404 in. 404, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Egberto, it's Bobby Rodrigo. How are you doing today?
Hey, talk to me, Bobby. What's up? Then make your point, my dear friend.
Well, the reason I called in is when I saw your subject and I read your blog, I wanted to ask you why. Well, I know you are a factual and honest and a reporter with journalistic integrity. I know you. My problem with what you wrote and what you're talking about is you do not call out the Democrats that are also fear-mongering. When you wrote your blog for this show, and you guys have talked about a number of things I'll address, but when you wrote your blog, this is the reason I called in, you mentioned the neocons, you mentioned the military-industrial complex, and of course the neocons and the military-industrial complex are involved in this. I mean, John McCain went in front of the Armed Services Committee in January and requested that Congress expands executive power under the AUMF, which, for those who don't know what that is the authorized use of military force, which is something that was created under George Bush, which was an enhancement of the War Powers Act that was created under Richard Nixon. He, and of course, he doesn't like this president, but he still went in front of Congress to expand the executive power, and we all know that it was neocons like him last year who was really the initial people who wanted to do the reverse and arm the rebels and bomb Syria, and then the president jumped on board, et cetera. But let's be clear here on what's going on as far as the ISIS fear-mongering, which I totally agree is way overblown, without question. I mean, Dianne Feinstein is on the record without question saying that she wants to do this. And she's not even talking about the president being required to come in Congress. We have Democrats that are saying,
Bobby,
that the only thing...
Keep that thought, Bobby. Keep that thought, but I want to butt in here for one specific reason, because I think that you said in what I've been writing that I haven't been calling out both. I want to just mention two things. Both for Coffee Party and Daily Coast, I wrote a piece called Americans Allowing Neocon Influence Media to Lead Us Back into War, and specifically in the paragraph I said the following: the president is being pulled indirectly by both the Democratic and Republican parties into a war he does not want. This is a big win for the military-industrial complex and the neocons. They have played with Americans' emotions once again. Once again, Americans will support policies that will ultimately hurt both our security and our economic well-being. In the piece that I wrote today, the one that you're quoting, I specifically also said, the blog that I read this morning specifically said the following. Bear with me one second, Bobby. I really want to get to it because I want to make sure folks understand that, first of all, you are absolutely correct in what you just said, and I want to let you know that I was giving nobody a pass. I said in the beginning of that blog post today as follows: President Obama for some time was avoiding the ISIS-ISIL hype. He continued his don't do stupid stuff policy. President Obama disregarded Hillary Clinton's neocon light-like critique in her Atlantic interview. So I was giving none of these guys a pass. You're correct, there are Democratic neocons as well, okay? But there are many more neocons on the other side, and I'm sure that you're well aware of that, my friend. Continue, please, Bobby.
Well, sir, I mean, we all know. I mean, they've been running these polls at the flagpole at, you know, how when situations
right.
come up, the American society rushes to the Republicans because they feel safer and all this other stuff. I'm always amazed by polls of any kind because nobody ever calls me to ask my opinion. But be that as it may, putting that aside, you have a situation here. I just where I stand, and a lot of people who are on there who've heard me talk, everyone knows where I stand with the party system. And the fact that I'm a principled, not party person. And without question, there's progressives who are furious at what's going on here. There's no doubt. Without question. There's also people on the right that aren't very happy with this either. And there are also independents, et cetera. I don't like it when the argument is shifted. And I understand what you said. I did read your article, and I remember seeing that. But I don't give anybody a pass on the Democratic side because I also don't give the president a pass. Now, why? Because he's done too many things during his presidency that were against the promises that he made when he first became president that were against Bush. You can go back and go quote for quote as to what he said that Bush was doing that he wasn't allowed to do constitutionally and from the standpoint of peace. And you even mentioned his Nobel Peace Prize, which to me, I actually agree with what you said. I actually hadn't thought about it that way before. But you can go line by line as to the things that he said that he was going to stop behavior of. Pick whatever foreign policy thing you want. And he has done the opposite of what he said he was going to do. Now, is it because he's been influenced by the military-industrial complex? I totally believe that. Jeremy Scahill said something at a place I watched him give a speech to about this very subject. He said you can actually track when this president changed his behavior is when he came out of his first briefing that every candidate gets when they're running for president, everything started to change. You can even look at the people that he picked to run. I mean, he left Robert Gates as the Secretary of Defense. Robert Gates, who was part of the Reagan administration criminalities with the Iran-Contra, he left as the Secretary of Defense. That should have screamed to everybody that something was going on that needed to be stopped, in my view. Libya is another example. ISIS is 30,000, even if you go with the 30,000 people, okay, ISIS is 30,000 people in pickup trucks, as you accurately point out. All of this stuff, you know, they posted something on Facebook just recently that every year in Texas, and you should, and I imagine you know this, you live in Texas, every year in Texas they have this machine gun day. And there was a video of it, a very, very intense video of, you know, people go down there and they shoot their automatic weapons all in mass. And they had this video of it from 2012. Yeah. People were posting it that they were saying ISIS was coming across the border and the militia was meeting them and they were having a battle. And people were buying into it. It's amazing how apathetic we are and how we don't vet the littlest things. And
exactly.
I just want to have a real discussion about what's really going on. You know, definitely the generals that are talking about the hype. I'm glad to see that. You know, we all know Wesley Clark. What was it in 2000 when he talks about the briefings that he went to and they were talking about the countries that they were talking about invading and how if you look at that list that we're all involved with it right now, let's have a real discussion about factual things, and let's hold all of these guys accountable. Every single one, I don't care where they come from, Democrat, Republican, I don't care. We got to stop this behavior and take care of ourselves at home, without a doubt.
That is the reason for this show. That is the reason I've been posting the types of articles that I've been posting, Bobby. And I mean, I've been trying to get as wide coverage and encourage people not only to share but to write themselves. Yourself, you need to be writing some of this stuff down. I noticed that you sent me two links. Send me the links with your narrative in a blog post, my friend. If you don't want to create your own blog post, write it up. I'll put you as a guest blog post on several other blogs because the co-opted, we know that. The media has been co-opted, and that is the reason why you notice not until after the president spoke did you get these guys who were saying, oh, wait a minute a bit, did they get a chance to put some of their, I don't even want to call it opposition, but just to tell Americans, hey, yes, yeah, we're going to war, but remember, these guys aren't that bad. These guys can be beat. I didn't put the entire Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson piece because what he said is, look, These guys are not difficult at all to beat. These are not like warriors. These are guys, you know, what drives me crazy, Bobby, is that this is like General Powell coming to Houston or to Kingwood here, getting a whole bunch of kids that he finds on the corner and say, hey, you want to fight a war? Good, I'll train you for 3 months, and suddenly you can fight a war against the most powerful country in the world, against the most powerful I shouldn't even say most powerful country in the world. I should say the most powerful countries, plural, in the world. But stay with me, Bobby. I want to bring in 313. 313, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, brother. This is Mike up in Lansing.
Hey, yep. Michael. How you doing, my friend?
Not too bad, and I'm hoping you're doing well.
I'm doing fine. Talk to me, my friend. I want to hear your point of view.
This is typical of the fear-mongering that takes place. It's taken place through history. You can go all the way back to Julius Caesar warning of this. But there's a quote that I would like to read from Hermann Göring, who was a Reich Marshal during the Nazi regime. This was 1946 during the Nuremberg trials. There wasn't in the trial, but I just would like to read this.
Please do.
It's a quote. Of course, the people don't want war, but after all, it's the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it's a democracy, a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament, or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for a lack of patriotism and exposing the country to a greater danger.
That was so true. You know what is sad about that, Michael? I wrote this piece and I placed it on Daily Coast. And even folks that read my stuff there was one guy who said, you know, we are all friendly, and he talked, you know, we were very civil in the way he spoke to me, but he called me an isolationist. And he made a case, he made a very good case for us doing what we're doing. And like I said, there's if you listen to the president's weekly address today, I posted his weekly address on my website and on my page today as well. And it's convincing. There's no doubt that the president's words as to what we're going to do and what we're going to do is convincing. It's not about the president per se. It's about the policy and our system as a country in the way we handle wars, etc. Stay with me, Michael. You and Bobby still hot. I need, and Jack, let me get to 424. 424, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hey, Willie, it's Justin. Sorry, my line got disconnected.
Oh, no problem, Justin. Did you want to add to what Michael had to say?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely the U.S. media, Fox, MSNBC, all the mainstream media outlets continue to fearmonger us into saying that ISIS, ICRAP, continue to say that ICRAP is a threat to the United States, direct threat to domestic our land. That means homeland, Hawaii, Alaska, which it's not. It is a direct, it is a threat, however, to our interests, which would be the Iraqi government and Baghdad, that it is a direct threat to that. So I do agree that they are fear-mongering. That is a direct threat to the United States homeland, which it is not. It is a direct threat to our brothers in Iraq, and I will not stand and let them walk through the valley of death. And I will not stand as a bystander and just allow them to be slaughtered. I will not stand and allow ISIS to run rampant against their sovereign nation and their sovereign borders. They clearly can't defend themselves, and they clearly are not confident in their government.
That is I understand your sentiment. I want to throw that to Bobby, but before I throw it to Bobby, I want to say something. When you say that Iraq is in the interest of, the United States has interest in Iraq. And the reason I wanted to get into some domestic policy as well is because under this president going forward, one of the things that we've done is between Canada, Venezuela, Mexico, and our own production, we don't really need, if we want it, the real interest in the Middle East stable supply has little to do with America's energy needs as opposed to Europe's energy needs and and China's energy needs, et cetera. Think about this, okay?
Yeah, I understand. You're 100% correct.
Okay, let me finish here. Let me finish my point. We are, petrol-wise, self-sufficient in this hemisphere. Now, then why should we ask American taxpayers to I mean, if they want to say we have the capability to go over there and do things, that is fine. But let's ensure that the people who are paying for this stuff are those people who are directly related. Because when we send American forces over there, we are sending it for two reasons. To make sure that the military-industrial complex is profitable, and for all those international stockholders that hold stocks in foreign companies who have interests in these regions are protected. That's not American citizens per se. That's a few American plutocrats, a few foreign plutocrats that we're trying to support. But let me run to Bobby. Let Bobby come in, because I know he has something to say. Bobby, come on in, brother.
Oh, absolutely. You know, first of all, you made a comment earlier about the what we're fighting. And I'll put this out there. 13 years in Afghanistan against people who were throwing rocks in a cave. Now, I for those who don't know, I was an operations specialist in the United States Navy. And what that job is when I'm 18 years old, I can tell you pretty much every weapon that can be used against a naval ship or something that I need to protect. My job was to know every single weapon and every carrier of every weapon in order to track it, identify it, and protect it and shoot it down. Plus, you know, every vehicle that I have to tell our weapons people to shoot down. So I assure you I know what I'm talking about when I discuss war operations. And I'm telling you, what happened in Afghanistan is absurd. We didn't even need to be on the ground in Afghanistan at all to take care of what we needed to take care of over there in a year. All we had to do was throw the Air Force at it, put everything up in the air, and use 1,000 of the 7,000 drones that we have, and we would have never had anybody dying the way we did on the ground for 13 years. It absolutely is about profit. Same thing with Iraq. From the standpoint of war history, we actually armed Hussein in the Iraq-Iran war. We have been fighting either in Iraq or with Iraq for a very, very long time. We have no business doing anything in any other country, and Iraq was all about money. That's all it ever was about. And our problem with selling the war, to address the other caller's point about how easy it is for the government to turn people into apathy, is how I look at it, is that in this country what's happening, and we all, and you mentioned it again, both of you did, is the corporate media is not acting like journalists and questioning it. If you look at the way that we went after Iraq under Bush, everybody was on board. All the Democrats, the Republicans, all of the media, let's go. We got to go get them. There's weapons of mass destruction. We don't care. We need to go there. Let's send in the black ops. Let's send in all this stuff. And it was a lot. And now we're stuck with that country. And if we are going to be a responsible country in this regard, I would agree with your caller that we owe some responsibility to it because we caused it. But that doesn't mean we need to go back to war there. That doesn't mean we need to put boots on the ground there. We are far, far superior than any country in the world when it comes to war if we actually fight a war as a war and not as a profit machine. That's how I would weigh in on that.
Yeah, excellent. Michael, you want to weigh in?
I think the other point, you know, I covered first about what the attitude is in the United States. The thing I really want to point out is that we negotiated with Maliki and the Iraqi government at the time. We wanted to leave a small force there. They insisted that we did not. As a sovereign country, that was their choice. and we could not leave, even if we wanted to. We could not have left any, even a small contingent of troops. And it's absolutely right. If we were at all out war, and I was, I'm out of the Vietnam era as a veteran, if we wanted to fight an all out war, you know, against another equally equipped country, yes, we could do that. But you know, using black ops, using covert ops, period, against ISIL and airstrikes, it's as far as I personally want to see us go. It has more of an interest to do with the surrounding countries. We're looking at some fairly strange bedfellows with Iran and Syria and Turkey and Kurds being against the Turks, the Turks being against the Kurds. I mean, it's a mess. And we created this mess. Nobody is surprised. I am certainly not surprised, even after 11 years, that we have left, that we left a vacuum there, and that we in ourselves are responsible, partly responsible for creating a group like ISIS, Levant, or ISIL.
That is so true. You know, I mean, listen. One thing I want to say, first of all, and I think Bobby agreed with you there in that we created a mess, and we in that part of the world, and we share some, again, some responsibility in being in there. But I think the only responsibility we should share is a responsibility that makes things better for those that are over there. And my contention is that I am agnostic as whether we, and I don't want to sound callous here at all, but I want it to be taken the way it should be. I'm agnostic as far as whether we should bomb certain areas or not. I'm more likely to believe that ISIS, as bad as it is, if Iraq, the country, asks us to bomb, to clear something out or whatever, that we probably should. What I don't want is a war footing, which is what I actually see us on. In other words, and I think, Bobby, you would agree as well. I mean, we messed up Iraq. If ISIS is coming and deteriorating the government, some bombing may be in order to help these guys if they're asking us to do it in Iraq. But that's about it. Not us getting down into a war footing that we are supposed to be able to maintain. We can spend a lot of money here in the United States to keep us safe, to control our own terrorists in this country, and do a whole lot more. Bobby, actually, I want you to respond to that one.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if you look at our war mongering, you know, as far as specific events, we don't go longer than 40 months. In my lifetime, I'm 52 years old. In my lifetime, we've never gone longer than 40 consecutive months without being involved in something. We continually stick our noses in places. I have no problem with humanitarian stuff. I have no problem. Listen, if there's something going on and people are being killed and genocide, you know what? We're powerful enough. We can just walk somewhere and create a wall, point enough guns at somebody and say, now what? But that's not what we're doing. We're going places and we are bombing and killing and then what? Then we're going to go and leave it the way it is, and especially in that region, and here's where we are.
Let me tell you one. I want to say one thing that is very important here, folks, and this is something that nobody talks about, right? I have yet to hear anybody talk about that. ISIS, ISIL, the Syrian, the people that are fighting in Syria, somehow these guys have quite a bit of ammunition and guns. Listen to me well. Ammunition and guns. These ammunition and guns are not being made in these wars, in these war areas. We know where ammunition and guns are made. I can guarantee you that the CIA knows every part of the world that has the capability to have factories to build these equipment. All this equipment continues to flow. You know why it continues to flow? Because it's American businesses, it's French businesses, it's Israeli businesses, Brazilian businesses. All these different businesses that are out there are supplying guess whom? both sides of the war. I mean, it's a cash machine, and we are the ones paying all for it on both sides of the equation. We're paying for the arms for the insurgents, and ultimately we're paying for the arms for those who are fighting the insurgents. If you don't think war is good business for a select few, I don't know how we can otherwise convince you. Okay, we're getting close to the end, and I need to close down, so I'm going to start with Justin. Give me your closer, my dear friend.
I as an American, will not stand and allow any human being from any part of the world to die based on what some whack job is trying to push his own agenda. When it comes to ISIS, it's a personal responsibility. If they had stayed in Syria and fought the regime and didn't push their crap that they're pushing, no one would be saying anything. But when they push crap, when they go to Iraq, we're standing up and saying something. They're not a threat to America, but they're a threat to Iraqis.
Thank you very much for calling, Justin. Keep calling into the show and making your opinion be heard. Thank you very much,
Thank
buddy.
You.
Michael.
Yeah, I'd like to add, if we want to be doing any humanitarian work, we should be looking at Central Africa. There is actually much more going on there as far as a battle using Boko Haram, for instance, that we should be concerned about, but not putting boots on the ground.
Michael, that is such a smart statement. I mean, what Justin said about, protecting those who need protected, if we get onto that scale, we just have to go south of our border, and we see a whole lot of places that need help that a whole lot of terrorists are terrorizing at this point in time. Thank you very much for calling in, as usual, Michael, and please keep calling and making your voice heard on the show. Bobby, close her out.
The thing I think is most important about any discussion like this is that we're talking about the facts and what really is going on, and trying to point out to people where they need to be looking for their answers and promote principle above party. Maybe we can get through this muck and mire that we're calling the media and the fear-mongering and actually get some results that are better for this country.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Bobby. We have also Greg in the room. Greg has a question. What? No libertarian media news outlet? That is funny. Greg, I wish you had called in. We always like to hear your point of view. But folks, first, I want to thank you all for calling in and listening one more time to Politics Done Right. I know this is a touchy subject. I mean, we don't want to be against the commander, nobody here is against the commander in chief, but we don't want either for our military industrial complex and the neocon to have an influence on the American population in such a manner that the president is forced to act on issues that he thinks he must act. I mean, after all, it's a democracy. I think for those that are listening to the show, for those that agree that we should not be at war, maybe help some but not at war, please do what's necessary to share our blog post. Come on and speak to Bobby. Speak to all of us here. Write. Share. Get on social media and push the message, because the military-industrial complex will continue to have the airwaves. It will continue to have cable to put their message out. Our only hope is that we sensible folk get our message out through social media and other avenues. Folks, please do remember that we have several shows. On Mondays, we have Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson at 10 p.m. Eastern. On Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, we have Lunch with Loudon. And on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, of course, you're with me. Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. I'll be checking out now. Remember, you can always go to the website for our podcast. Thank you very much for giving me 1 hour of your time. You have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye-bye.